I'm a champion sleeper now. That hasn't always been the way things have gone for me. Let me tell you a little bit about my background and my relationship with sleep, because I'm guessing that it is maybe similar to yours in some way, shape, or fashion. When I went to the University of Alabama, I moved into the dorm at Patey Hall. I didn't want to miss a thing. So sleep was not at the top of my mind. Later, I needed to work three jobs to help pay for my way through school. Work for the city, which would be in the afternoons and evenings. I'd work in nightclubs. Those would be at night. So I'd go from one job to the next. And then throw in there with like a car detailing business that I had kept running and kept using as a way to generate like just straight cash that would be erratic and all over the place. God knows it was probably lucky I got through college. The nightclub thing went on for several years. Most of the time I wouldn't get home before 4 or 5 in the morning. Then I moved to Seattle, and before I got some real traction in my career and got a big break, so that I only was working one job, I was actually holding down at least three jobs, right? The Seattle Theater Group, the Experience Music Project, and I was the bar manager at a restaurant for a restaurant chain of the Melting Pot in Seattle. And then even as my career settled down, in my mid-late 20s, early 30s in New York City, I was around Broadway. So the theater, sports and entertainment, concerts. I had to entertain clients a lot, and life got in the way. And what that meant for me was that my sleep schedule was erratic. One night I might go to bed at 10 o'clock. The next night I might go to bed at 3 o'clock. One morning I might need to get up at 7 o'clock because I had to be in the office at 9. Other days I might have to get up, could sleep in till 10:30. Trying to work out and take care of myself, trying to get everything done. It was an impossible schedule that I kept for myself, and it came with costs in my physical health, my mental health, probably in my behaviors, probably even hurt my career in some ways. And that's what we're going to talk about today, because my guest is Dr. B. Joy John. And Dr. John has a new book out called Nobody's Sleeping. And Nobody's Sleeping talks about the sleep challenges that face many, many, many of us. And it's a great conversation. He offers us, first he talks about why sleep is a superpower. Then we talk about his sleep now formula for getting better sleep. We talk about some of the health challenges that come with poor sleep. We also talk about some of the ways getting a lot of rest can help you. The crazy thing about sleep is that it's kind of tied to almost everything. It's a really interesting conversation because I knew how much I struggled sleeping until really like the last couple years. I thought it was interesting because Dr. John sent me the book because a mutual friend of ours had worked with Dr. John and improved his sleep a lot, and it was great. But before I turn the conversation over to me and Dr. John, I want to plug a few things. First off, if you're new here, thank you for spending some time with me. You can find everything you need to know about me at my website. It's davewakeman.com. There's going to be a pop-up window that should come up right away where you can sign up for newsletters, and I'll let you know what I'm working on, new podcast episodes, new appearances, all kinds of stuff. And speaking of appearances, I will be in London from the 28th of June to the 7th of July. There will be more details to follow. It is a combination of pleasure and business. So we will talk about that a little bit more in the next couple weeks. But I'll be in London for about 10 days. This year, I am working to get your voice into the podcast a lot more. I've found that the podcast is the most personal form of communication between me and you. People feel like, you know, we have this long-running relationship with each other, so I want to include you more. I don't want it just to be me talking to you all the time. I want you to talk to me. And you can do that by sending me questions at dave@davewakeman.com. Right now, I'm really curious about your questions around strategy especially in stagnant, declining, and uncertain economic environments. I realize that that is one of the areas that I've done a great job in. And so I want to know where you might be having an issue. I want to know what you're thinking about, what you're working on. I want to know who you would like to hear from. I want to know what you want to know. So send me those questions, those ideas, and those thoughts to dave@davewakeman.com. Or you can just send me a note to say hello and say, Dr. Sleep Fix episode was a great episode. I love those as well. So make sure you check that out. Check out the website, davewakeman.com, the newsletters, and I will be in London. So before I go any further and drag this out, let me turn it over to my conversation with Dr. B. Joy John on The Business of Fun.
Dr. B. Joy John, how's it going? Thank you for being on the Business of Fun podcast. I'm excited to talk to you about sleeping today.
Yes, Dave, thanks for having me. I'm ready. Let's go.
You say you're ready now, but the thing is like it could get out of control very quickly. It wouldn't be the first time either, but I'll try to you be gentle on me.
All right.
But you have this really great book that we're going to talk about today called Nobody's Sleeping. It's 7 Proven Sleep Strategies for Better Health and Happiness. And we were going back and forth about sleep because I had really recognized that maybe I was I always thought I was a bad sleeper, but then I became a good sleeper. And so a couple of the key takeaways that I want to give to you before we get started having this conversation is, number one is I came to understand from reading the book is that sleep is maybe the highest ROI thing you can do for yourself. You know, the impact, the positive impact of getting a good night's sleep is immeasurable, it seems like. And I think I knew that, but you being a doctor, you were able to explain that. And I thought that was really important because, you know, I have a 13-year-old. I'm like, you got to go to bed. You got to get your rest, dude. He's always like fighting me, but then he goes and gets a good night's sleep and he's great. The second big one to me was like, no one is really destined to be a bad sleeper and we can all improve our sleeping habits. You know, some more than others, but we all have an ability to get more sleep. And I think that's important because, again, I always thought I was a really, really bad sleeper. And then I turned it around and now I kind of, and which makes me the third thing is like, I understand exactly why I thought I was a bad sleeper. And I understand that I stumbled into a lot of good things that helped make me be not a bad sleeper. So thank you, because that's like really helps me continue down this better path that I'm on. But I want to start out the question now by asking you, when as a doctor, what are like the 3 or 4 most common reasons that people are struggling with their sleep right now when they come to you? Like, what do you see that's all the time?
So, Dave, thanks. You know, the sleep is the superpower that it's available to all of us, right? So just imagine if you compromise 1 hour of sleep a night and add it to a week, it's like literally you didn't sleep one whole night. So we're compromising on the most important vital function. Sleep is the foundation on which fitness, memory, performance, and even diet and, you know, it's all built on. We forget the basic block. So once you discover that, you know, we all go through struggles, you know, there's something called situational insomnia. We struggle with situations. You know, I struggled a lot because in med school and when I lost my mom and then as a small business owner, but I found a way because my foundation was always good. So I can build on it. Life happens to all of us. So the question that you asked me is what are the key things? So what's happening is we all have our new best friend, our cell phone. We're going to do whatever it takes to be on that thing. So it's human because it provides everything we need. Guess where that extra time is coming from to be with our best friend? We're compromising on sleep, right? So we can't compromise work. We can compromise our personal things like working out, with family time. But we can compromise on sleep. So everybody takes that 1-2 hours extra to be on their phone. That's huge. That's huge. And plus, the next thing that's happened is people, ever since what happened with COVID, the workplace came to the home And from the home, it went to the bedroom. So we're taking all our stuff into the bed, and we are working with our computers, laptops. Unfortunately, bedroom is only for sex and sleeping, not for snoring, working, or worrying, right? So once you start being on the phone, it tells our brain, you know, the light, especially in the bedroom where there's no ambient light, it tells the brain, hey, it's still daytime. There's no need to go to sleep. The third big thing is we all want information about ourselves. We are looking into data mining our own sleep. Sleep is contrary to the hustle culture. You can't data mine your way into sleep. You can't hustle your way into sleep. Sleep is one of those functions. You have to go through the back door. You have to work it. You have to be gentle with it. And so this is contrary to the hustle culture we are in. And this is an art. But once you discover it, we are being a better version. So those are the three big things, you know, the use of our cell phone and data mining, and also bringing the computers and the work into the bedroom. This is completely destroying. Because once you data mine, people come to me all the time. And then one of the commonest, hey, my the REM sleep is not good. And then there's, I don't get deep sleep. So what you going to do? They worry more, and then they destroy their sleep even further. So those are the top three, Dave.
Yeah. All right. So those are great. You can only crush your sleep by not crushing it.
Correct. Yes.
That's going to be my new saying. It's great, though, that you talk about the info about ourselves and how people are it's contrary to hustle culture, because when I asked in the Talking Tickets Slack channel, and I asked some of the readers of my newsletter, you know, what questions they wanted me to ask you, the sleep tracking and kind of like how much deep sleep versus REM sleep, and some of those quantifiable things, those were the biggest questions that I got. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm right. I don't know. You'll tell me in a second, is that there's no hard and fast rule necessarily. Like, you know, one night you may get a lot of deep sleep and a lot of REM sleep, and some nights you won't. And that's just normal. So that, like, always trying to hit your sleep metrics on your tracking device or whatever, that can be counterproductive. That's accurate, right?
That is correct. So the obsession with information, especially about sleep, sleep is a little bit, you know, spiritual and sacred. You don't want to go too much into it. You know, I tell people with my data, they get the data, then I tell them to implement my proven strategies, and then go at the data later, see whether you have improved. There's no point just, so what do people do? They data mine, and then they go for information on the internet. There's plenty of bad information, and they do this. So this is the classic one, Dave. So let's say you are only sleeping, 6 or 5 hours. So you go to bed around 10, and then you only fall asleep by midnight. Guess what people are doing? They actually go to sleep earlier. So now you're struggling from 9 p.m. to midnight, not able to sleep. That is the information. So I tell folks, if you're not able to fall asleep by midnight, and if you're going to bed at 10, go to bed closer to the time you fell asleep. So people are doing wrong things, and they're drinking caffeine and tea, the sleepy time tea and the sleepy time cookies. All those things are not, you know, they're best for you, because sometimes caffeine in vulnerable people can last up to 12 hours. You know, even my own daughter, she's drinking a macchiato, trying to go. She was preparing for the applications and tests, and she doesn't sleep well. She was having that around 7 p.m. How are you going to sleep? You know, the caffeine can last a long time. So all those things have gotten into people. So by filling the sleep journal or completing the sleep journal and taking the sleep assessment, you know where you are. So the trackers are important to get the data, but then you have to implement something before you. It's like the classic. If you're on a weight loss program, they tell you not to weigh yourself every day, because that, you know, you only weigh 30 days or 60 days, but then now you're looking at the data every day. What does it do? It does not do you any good. So that's, in short, my take on the trackers and wearables, I call it.
So I have my I have that problem, and I know I try to fight myself from doing it, but I look at my VO2 max rate because I've been running a lot. Yeah, I've been running a lot more, And fortunately for me, it's going up every day, but a little bit. But the thing is like, I know that I have to really wait like a month to look at it before I can learn anything, but I look at it every day. So I am guilty of this. But you talked about your seven proven sleep strategies. So let's kind of touch on those for a minute. Because the number one one is to create a sleep plan. And when I said at the very start that I used to be a what I considered not a great sleeper, it was because my sleep schedule was all over the place. Some days I'd go to work at 9 a.m. Other days I'd go to work at noon almost. It'd take you a while to wind down. I'd have events at night. I'd have events in the morning. My schedule was all over the place. I wasn't unique in that. And one of the big parts of the book is you talk about shift workers and people with erratic schedules causing them. But speak for my, I'll talk about in my house, right? My son has a really, really strict schedule because we identified early on that that was like a key to success for him. I now have a very, very strict schedule. I usually, except for last night when I was finishing your book before I was talking to you, I am always in bed by right around 11 o'clock. And I get up at 6:45 every morning. That's my schedule. My wife doesn't. How can I get her to create a proper sleep schedule? How can I get her to create a consistent sleep schedule?
So the seven proven sleep strategies. I did the acronym. It's called Sleep Now. SLEEPNOW. All your listeners can, you know, take it down. So I'll break it down. The first in the letter is the S as in, you know, schedule. So roughly, the good time to sleep is between 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. That's the general. You can go back and forth. Like I mentioned, people who struggle to sleep, they actually go earlier and struggle more. So this is called sleep restriction. So you fall asleep close to the time you went to bed, 11:30, but be consistent in the morning. You have to wake up at 6 a.m. So this is more important than the time you went to bed, because once you, so I'm trying to create a sleep debt. So if you do this for 1 or 2 weeks, your body will fall asleep. So first 2 weeks are very, very hard. You know, people call with complaints about me. They dislike me for the advice I give, and they dislike themselves. They feel awful. So, and another thing, do not take naps when you're in the schedule, because we're trying to create the sleep pressure or sleep debt, and you won't have consolidated sleep in at nighttime. So that's the number one. So you have to follow that, because once you, so for any plan to succeed, Dave, in our life, we should have a master plan, and the schedule is the number one. So this technique is well proven. It's called sleep restriction. So you, when you restrict your sleep, you will have that clock. This has worked for me for 25 years. This is the first thing I tell every person who walks into my office with not able to sleep well. So that's one. Next is L is low light, low noise, low temperature. It's very important, because melatonin, the natural hormone that we have, is only secreted in darkness, you know, and low temperatures. So that's why when you are on a tropical vacation, you don't sleep well, because the temperature is high, right? And that's the same reason I'm going to talk next. So same thing with, you know, you want to have less noise, and, you know, noise affects your sleep. So low noise, and also melatonin is only secreted in lower temperatures. I tell people to keep the temperature between 65 to 70. And also melatonin is only secreted in darkness. Mela means darkness. So the light from your phone and the computers all kind of affect the secretion of melatonin. You have a question?
I do. I keep, at night we keep the bedroom at 64. Is that too low?
That's fine. You just experiment it. See, the melatonin starts to secrete just after our core body temperature drops, 30 minutes just prior. That's when the peak of melatonin happens. But we have to, you know, give our body to cool down a little bit. You know, I'm going to talk in the next E. The next E is the electronics. We talked about it. So the light is a major problem. Plus, it's also anxiety provoking. I tell people to get off their phones at least 30 minutes prior. Ideally, it should be one. I'm actually done with my phone by 7 p.m. from last December. That was my New Year resolution. Oh, yeah. So I'm on my phone hard between 7 a.m. and, you know, 7 p.m. At 7 p.m. I'm done, because I'm getting ready to the ritual of you know, sleep. So if you keep it, if it's close by you, you know, the notification, and in the middle of the night is very common awakening, because sleep is simple but complicated. We go through different cycles and stages, and then when you come from a deeper stage up, you have tendency to wake up and then what you look at the phone, it's 3 o'clock. Oh my God, it's 3 o'clock. I got only 2 hours of sleep. Oh, only. So that is, so I have no timepieces in my bedroom. I have my phone in my bathroom. So I set an alarm for 6 or 6:30. I literally have to wake up. I'm done for the day. I don't snooze the, you know, so very, very important thing that I'm, you know, keep your phone away from you. You know, so that's the E. The next E is in the acronym is SLEE is exercise. Ideally exercise in the morning, but if people have to exercise in the evening, make sure you exercise at least 4 hours prior to going to sleep, because when you exercise, guess what? You are releasing heat. And like I mentioned, heat is not good for the melatonin production, so it's thermogenic. So, and same thing with having big meals towards the bedtime, because the end result of any digestive, that's why after eating a big steak, the body's trying to digest it, and then it makes heat, and that's not conducive for sleeping. So at least exercise 4 hours prior. And then the next is in the acronym is P, power of your mind. So you're giving a chance to rest by calming your body first, by not exercising, not having access to your cell phone close to you. So you're giving a chance. See, sleep is, we want it to be an on and off switch, but sleep is like a dimmer. You have to slowly work. You have to dim it. We wish it's on and off, but unfortunately, there's no magic for that. So giving you a chance. So in powering off your mind, I give two techniques to people. This is most important. First one is vivid imagination. So what we do is we take our worries to our bedroom, but here I am making everyone their own creator of their show. So you start thinking about, you know, if you watched your show, you become the creator. You want the abstract in your bedroom, not reality. You don't want to take reality into your bedroom. I have been doing this for all my life. And even last night, I was thinking of something. I went to sleep and I want to see how the movie unfolds. So I'm going into the abstract. And the other thing I teach people is the yoga nidra, easy to do. One of the easiest yoga, you lay down. It's called the corpse pose. It's called the shavasana. You lay down and with your palms up and you think about nothingness. Nidra means nothingness. So you start focusing from your top of your scalp, and just, this is one of the concept of cognitive behavioral therapy and progressive muscle relaxation. You also tend to relax. So now already you're drifted in, and by this time you're done. So you're into sleep. And then continuing on, these are the two things that I always tell people, but you have given your body a chance, not having your phone next to you, not exercising, not having a big meal. And also, I also tell people to, you know, not to drink too much, because alcohol is also a diuretic. You know, it's going to wake you up later in the night. And the alcohol metabolizes to acetaldehyde, which wakes you up. You know, that's how you have the hangover feeling. So continuing on, N-O, no to worries. That's the next in my acronym. No to worries. We all worry. I worry. I recommend everybody to worry, but make sure you worry between 6 p.m. and 8 p.m. Because you're done after that. You know, I had to prepare for the show. I was wondering what Dave was going to ask me. So I already looked up all your questions. So I worry about it. And at 8 o'clock, I'm done. I'm getting into the ritual. So no to worries, no worrying in bed, right? So worry outside the bed. And then is W is win by losing yourself. This is my favorite. Bedroom, you should be the master of your sleep. You just have to take it easy, not complicated things. So you just know complicated different things, you know, increasing your cognitive activity. You already are losing yourself. You're starting losing yourself by 8 p.m. And I read my book or my favorite show, and then I'm going to bed around 10 p.m. So that's the Sleep Now acronym. Let's say, you know, schedule. Low light, low noise, low temperature, you know, no to electronics. And the next E is exercise 4 hours prior. You know, prior P is, you know, powering off your mind. N-O is no to worries. And W is win by losing. That's my proprietary Sleep Now acronym that I came up with. And, you know, I just follow the 7 proven sleep strategies. So this is it.
Yeah, no, I think it's great. The one thing you talk about, exercise, because I came back to that, because even before, like right before we got here, I had gone outside. I have been trying to make sure I get outside to get sunlight every day. And I have noticed that it, because now we're in the winter, it's harder to get the sunlight. So I've been making a conscious decision. But the way you describe exercise in the book, mm-hmm. and how it's like you use the exercise to kind of build up a deficit, like, and I don't know if this is me making it up or this is the way you describe it. It's like digging a hole for yourself that only sleep can fill later on.
Yes.
Can you talk to people about what kind of exercises or that people can do to help build that deficit? Because I think it would be, you know, A, for sleep, it's great. But I think just a lot of these other issues that we talked about, like as sleep being a superpower, just the blood pressure, the diet, the mental health, all these things all play together. Yes. Where can people start with exercising to build this? Because it's I know the importance.
That's a great question. So we always know people who are laborers and people who work outside, actually, they sleep better. So we the world of sleep is about ready to change in the way we perceive things. We always thought sleep is just in the brain and it's a chemical. Now we know these muscles contribute to sleep. They make this is the early information that's coming out of Japan. They found you know, if they keep these mice active, they secrete some of those sleep-inducing chemicals to help us to go to sleep. So that is so important. Working out, you know, so the muscles also send signals to the brain to sleep. And this is early information. More data is going to come. So I always wondered why people working extraordinarily, they are the most sound sleepers. So now we know. So, but the caveat is make sure the exercise also creates, the exercise also creates heat. You don't want that closer to bedtime. So if you can, work, any hobbies, any jobs, any manual labor, or even a workout regimen during the day, preferably, if we can stop by 6 p.m., because if you're going to bed at 10, that'll be the greatest thing you can do. So the world of sleep and the understanding of sleep is beginning to change. We also are giving credit to the muscles, which we never thought about. So I think in the next 10 years, this information is going to be significant.
Yeah. And I think, I think it, some of the stuff that you pointed out in the book was stuff that, I guess if you pay attention, seems obvious to you. The other thing I'm really curious about, and again, some of these things, like I said, it's my wife, it's, could be me. Sometimes it needs the help with the sleep schedule. What about people who end up waking up? Because you talk about people who wake up during the middle of the night, especially as people get a little older or, they have worries on their mind, the stressful situations. Mm-hmm. People find, they maybe have to use the restroom or whatever, and then they struggle to go back to sleep. Right. Yes. The vivid imagination thing works really well, because I was drawing up soccer plays for my son's soccer team mm-hmm. in my head last night, because I had just finished the book and I was like, oh, yeah, I'm going to like draw cartoon diagrams and like think of soccer plays and see like how they would work. And that was how I nodded off to sleep. But then sometimes I wake, and I think it was, this is me, and I guess it's a two-part question. Part of it was like I went to bed a little bit late, so I ended up getting to bed maybe about midnight as opposed to 11, because I was finishing the book because I was talking to you today. Mm-hmm. So then, so it seems to me that it tends to be I wake up in the middle of the night when I go to bed late. My sleep schedule is not where it was. So then I'll be up for like 45 minutes or an hour. How do people deal with that? Because I know it's not unusual, because that was one of the questions that I got in the Slack channel, was like, how do you fall back asleep at night when you wake up? Like, you got to go to the bathroom, you start thinking about stuff. I don't do it anymore, but I used to be like, oh, let me look at my phone real quick. But I don't do that. So how do people deal with that? Like, where does, how can we like shorten that time if it becomes a problem?
Great question. So somewhere along the line, we have to think about the clock problem, right? So some people are like night owls. So when you are a teenager, the hormones move the clock forward, right? So what happens, the teenagers have their busy night schedule, weekend. So it moves the clock forward. So we have to understand that. And especially also in older adults, that's why I dedicated a chapter for teens and older adults. Their clock seems to be moved forward. I mean, they go to bed earlier, like 7 p.m. and they wake up at 2 and they're wandering around the house. So you have to think whether it's a clock problem, right? So you have to move. I described the therapies to move the clock forward and backward, by using light. You also said you are a creature of light. We're all creatures of light. We revolve around the light. We have the circadian rhythm, which is 24 hours aligned. So to answer the specific question, what happens in the middle of the night awakening, which is the most common question I get asked. So what happens is we go through cycles in and out. We are vulnerable to go up to the lighter stage of sleep and then accidentally wake up. The first thing is not to be aware of, right? So you're looking at the clock. So I already gave that information out. So the next question I ask people is, why are you waking up? Do you have a sleep disorder that wakes you up? The number one cause of a sleep disorder that wakes you up is sleep apnea. So when you stop breathing, the brain says, wake up. And that's one of the treatable causes of sleep maintenance insomnia. So insomnia, difficulty to sleep, is divided into two: sleep onset, that you can't sleep in the beginning, or you can't maintain. The question that you pertained is sleep maintenance. They can't maintain the sleep. And the number one cause people are waking up is to rule out sleep apnea, or they have limb movement disorder. They're moving their legs a lot at night and they wake up. So you could have a sleep disorder on the background of this that's making you wake up. So unfortunately, let's say you don't have a sleep disorder and you wake up, you know what you need to do? If you can't go back to sleep, leave the room right away. Just don't torture yourself and the bedroom becomes a torture chamber. Leave, go out, go to the living room, watch TV. In the past, I never recommended TV because that was 20 years ago. Now TV is better than the cell phone because of the ambient light. So the ambient light, you know, accentuates the cell phone. So I would tell people to read a book. Don't look at your phone. Don't pay bills. Don't increase your cognitive activity. You know,
a physical book, though.
Yes, physical book. You're very book.
Clear about the physical book.
Yes, yeah. Read a book and then come back and try it over. And then even if you're struggling, keep waking up at 6 a.m. See, that's the, remember, I cannot reiterate this enough, because you're creating a sleep debt. Oh, you woke up at 3, you didn't sleep till 6 a.m. Wake up. Next day, you might suffer the same thing. You might suffer for a few days, but guess what? By a week or two, you are able to fall asleep. To get through this is hard, but I encourage everybody to do it, and then you will feel successful. But most people, what they do is they wake up and they snooze button. When you're in this process of consolidating sleep, two weeks in a span of, like, you know, 10 years, you're suffering is not a big deal. You will get your sleep.
Especially to me, it's like, you know, because again, I think that was like, I think what I did, and I don't remember exactly how I went about it, but that's like, it's important. It's like, well, it's a short-term suffering, but you know, there's an endpoint. Exactly. Like, you know, eventually you're going to crash. Yes. And you're going to go, you'll be able to sleep. So you brought up sleep apnea, and I told you, like, oh, I did a sleep study and I had like 1.4 or something, like, incidents per hour. What is sleep apnea, number one? And then, like, what do people need to know about it? Because you come back to this over and over again, and I think probably what ends up happening, and maybe tell me if I'm wrong, is, like, it's underdiagnosed because people don't recognize it's a real issue. But it is. Right. It's, like, a terrible issue.
Yes. So the word apnea is from Greek word meaning apnea, meaning stopping breathing. So what happens is when the airway closes, there's no air passing through the airway, and then the brain says, man, you're dying, let's wake you up. There is this flight or fight response. You literally been shaken up, and then you wake up, and then you wake up subconsciously, and then you go back to sleep. So this happens multiple times. So during the night, your blood pressure is jacked up. You know, our blood pressure is high. Right now we are all passionate about this this video. Our blood pressure will be high, but at nighttime it regulates. But people with sleep apnea, it does not happen, because you are at constant flight or fight mode, and that increases your blood sugar level. And sleep apnea is the absolute, I mention it so many times in my book, because that's one correctable thing. You can add 10 years to your life, you know, it can improve your memory, because what happens when you have an apnea, there's no oxygen flowing. So the blood vessels get narrowed eventually, and the sensitive areas in the prefrontal cortex of your brain that's important for memory, it gets all messed up and it gets narrowed. There's no oxygen, and eventually those cells die. So it's actually one of those treatable causes to dementia prevention is obstructive sleep apnea. So men are more prone for sleep apnea because of the size of the larynx. And the air, you know, the tongue's bigger, the uvula, the soft palate is all bigger and more vulnerable to closing. And also men snore more because our larynx is bigger. It's like a trumpet. You know, it gets amplified and the end goes into that. So women don't snore much because their larynx is smaller. And in women, estrogen protects women against sleep apnea. But when women undergo menopause or perimenopausal, that's when they are also at equally risk for a man. So if you're snoring you have to rule out sleep apnea, whether you're a child or you're adult, you're an older adult, mm-hmm. because you know blood pressure, blood sugar, memory, concentration, you're in a mental fog, memory, all those things can be treated by this addressing your sleep apnea. Every man or every person who's close to, you know, menopause or menopause will have sleep apnea. I have a little sleep apnea myself, so I take care of it. I practice what I preach. You know, I also wake up sometimes in the middle of the night. So what do? I wake up and say, hey, I need to do what I preach to do. So I go watch some TV, read a book, and I come back to sleep. It has happened to me once or twice a year. It happens to all of us. So, but the reason why it's you're waking me up, you have to make sure you have a sleep disorder because the brain is waking you up. So, and the number one easily treatable trait is obstructive sleep apnea.
Yeah. And the thing I found interesting, and I want to ask about this because it'll play into your one of your favorite subjects, which is the NFL and athletics. But you talk about the neck circumference of people.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
And
yes.
I've been lifting weights since I was 14 years old, I guess. So that means now 35 years. And you know, so I was like going, oh, you know, athletes can definitely not have sleep apnea because they you know, if they're like really, you know, strong and their neck, their shoulders are broad and wide, this is where I had my sleep study, you know, you can still have it because it's not necessarily the muscle even of your neck. It's like the tissue side. And I think exactly. A lot of people, they don't understand that because it was something that was like, seemed a little, it took me a bit to understand, like, oh, you could still be like completely jacked up and have sleep apnea, have sleep problems because your neck is large and it just gives more muscle and tissue because you have to be very, very careful. Is that right? Or did I say that wrong?
Yes. There is a correlation by statistics. If your man's neck circumference is over 17.5 inches, you are likely to have sleep apnea because the bigger the neck, the bigger the chance of constriction. The large size neck, it can almost correlate to, sleep apnea. You know, you can see one of the famous football players, actually his wife went on the campaign talking about obstructive sleep apnea, which was one of the reasons why he died. So what happens is when you stop breathing, it's put so much pressure on the heart. There is that response. And during that response, you can have a arrhythmia or irregular heart rate, and that could be one of the reasons why people die in their sleep. So treatment of sleep apnea is very, very important. You know, the athletes focus so much. They're so smart. They work so hard. They're so disciplined, and they do concentrate on diet, workout. But they also need to focus on sleep. The elite athletes, you know, sleep a lot. You know, I've heard, the famous Tom Brady saying how much important his sleep is. And I've had many other athletes talk about the elite ones, they always focus on sleep. And also, if you look at athletes have more sleep problems than the general population because of their schedule, the stress, and especially college athletes, they also focus on academics. There's pressure on that. You know, some of the disorders like restless legs is more common. You know, schedule problems are common. And also the bigger the size, you're at risk for sleep apnea. So all those things play into the part of an athlete. So that's something called athletic sleep screening questionnaire that you can look into and see and screen athletes. I would recommend all coaches to screen the athletes for sleep problems at whether you are high school, college, or even professional athletes to take care of sleep problems, because correcting that, you can have more workout, your reaction time is better, your thought process is better, you're not in a mental fog on the day of the big game, and not to mention the travel and the schedules. Some of the teams play at noontime, you're playing not at the optimal best, you know, you're around 2 o'clock, you're more sleepy. So yeah. I've seen that happen all the time. So.
Well, you said that was what was funny to me, was like you're talking about how the Titans are susceptible to this, which is like a really should be a big endorsement to call Dr. John, because he's a big Titans fan and he wants to give him the advantage. But like in the third quarter, the fans and the team always seem to struggle. And yes. You say it's because of like time zone difference, because most of the teams are coming from the east or west coast, so their circadian rhythm is a different spot than the Titans. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's data out there.
And I would never have thought of that. That's like crazy, because I would have thought like the rhythm of the crowd would have like pulled everybody forward, but everybody's like falls asleep at the like at the same time.
See, I'm not a statistician, but I actually started looking at the third quarter net point differential for our team, and it's actually really bad for the last few years. It's like minus 23, minus 19. It's consistent in the third quarter because the offense is not performing, defense is not performing, and there's a lull. You can easily fix that by doing a few things. See, there's data out there. The West Coast team do better. This is public data, NFL. They do better at night games because the other teams are sleepy. I mean, I wish. Look at the Lions game and the Niners game. The Lions never showed up in the second half. Guess what time it was? It was bedtime. It was like 10 o'clock their time. And everybody's analyzing. I'm looking over there. I'm looking at it very clearly. Hey, they're sleepy. Their reaction time is not. There's nothing wrong with the players there. Everybody's trying, but they're sleepy. So that they have the advantage. But I'm trying to share the advantage also to the noon games. I think in all fairness, we trade players up and down. I think either the players, you know, be aware and the coaches are aware, or we trade times too. All teams should play at different times. Not one team gets stuck at the noon game, because at 2 o'clock, you are really sleepy. That's when the third quarter happens, 1:42 around 2 p.m. Just guess, have you ever gone to a meeting around 2 p.m.? Wonder why? Nothing gets happened around that time. You're sleepy. We stop for siesta or the tea time all over the world, and we drink coffee. We are at a lull. We don't make good decisions, and except these teams that are stuck around that time, and it's unfortunate. I think we need to switch that around.
I stop coffee at noon. So
great.
Just so,
that's great.
Just so we're clear.
Yes.
All right. So that then ties into like another question that I have is about jet lag. And anybody who travels a decent amount, I think I might still be jet lagged from my last trip to Australia is the truth. And
that was you never get over that jet lag.
No, and that was like 4 years ago. How can people do a better job of insulating themselves from the negative impacts of jet lag?
So jet lag is this is a perfect example of the misalignment of the circadian rhythm, your internal clock and where you are going, right? Our circadian rhythm takes one day to adjust for 1 hour. So imagine if you're going to a place in the East Coast and it's 2 hours ahead. So it takes 2 days for it to adjust to the new time, right? Mm-hmm. So then what we actually do when we go there, we're still stuck at our old time, and we try to stick to the old time. So I tell people when you reach a destination, imagine going to Europe, it's even worse, like 8 hours. So you have to stick to that time. You have to forget where you were. And some of the things you can do is to, sleep a little bit earlier and earlier, or, depending on which way you're going, or later, a few days in advance to align your clock. So imagine a corporate executive, he has to go land in the plane and give a meeting at 10 o'clock. Well, he reached there at 8, but when he left town, or it's at 2 a.m., he's sleepy. And the airline industry also, sometimes they open all the shades when they're not supposed to. They give you coffee. So it's a mess. But we have to understand that, and adjust to that. And I dedicated a chapter on that for jet lag people, how to, you can use a little bit of melatonin if you need. That's the only times I used melatonin to sleep. So remember, you prepare early before you leave, or when you reach there, adjust to the same time. And don't go to where you were. Go to where you are now. And then, like you said, Dave, people who are vulnerable with their sleep, that could be the precipitating event. I always look for the three P's in insomnia. What are you predisposed? What's your precipitating and what's your perpetuating? So people with bad sleep, when they go to on a big trip, their sleep is gone. That's the precipitating event. And then they keep on perpetuating that bad habit. So now you have the P's, you're falling into the P's. You don't know how to get off. Uh-huh. Most people, when they fall into the P's, they don't know how to get back on it, because they do the research, they do the variables, they get all the wrong information, and they're in a muck. You know, the number one cause, we're losing about $411 billion because of absenteeism from work. This was the data from 2017. Imagine all the errors that can happen. You know, NTSB reported that there's half the vehicles are on the road at nighttime, but 2/3 of all the accidents happen around like 2 a.m. And, you know, I can go on and on about the great disasters in the world that happen around nighttime. So,
this is great because it reinforces what I try to do, which is like when I get someplace, I try to take a short nap, maybe 30 minutes, you know, depending on where it is I'm going. And then I just try to fight through it until it's like a normal, my regular bedtime. So I'm glad to know that that's like the wise decision. Because then after a day, the next morning, I'm usually pretty good.
Yes.
It's just that first day, man. It's brutal. All right. So you have a website. And it's called sleepfixacademy.com.
Yes.
And at the sleepfixacademy.com, that was good. It's like a tongue twister for me. You have a sleep assessment and a sleep journal.
Yes.
What would you want... I would like people to go there and do this assessment and understand the sleep journal, because I think it would be valuable to teach people a little bit about their sleeping schedule. Can you give people a couple pointers about using the journal and the assessment just so they can understand exactly what they're looking for?
Right. So in the journal, I mentioned your sleep habit. When are you going to bed? When are you falling asleep? When are you drinking your coffee? When are you taking your nap? How much alcohol are you drinking? Are you on vacation? Are you in the work week? So all these things, and when you're taking your medications. So once they have a visual pattern, you know, I've had literally people looking at it and say, wow, you know, I thought I only drink two cups of coffee. I'm drinking actually four. I thought I quit my coffee at 2 in the afternoon, but I'm drinking at 6 p.m. So you have to be true to yourself. And I, you know, sleep is one of those things. It's an art. I like people to have a visual. They print it. I actually have printed copies. I gave it to them. I recommend people printing it. It's also available on my book. You just print that piece of paper and just write it down and color it. And you can see the beautiful pattern where they're sleeping. Is the clock moved forward? Are they a night owl? You know, is it mood, you know, advanced? So I'm able to see that pattern and point. It's an eye opener. You know, you're smart to stop coffee at noon, because like I mentioned, some people can add, you know, the caffeine lasts about 6 hours, but in vulnerable people, it can last up to 12 hours. So I tell, you know, you can find a lot of things on that. But I want everybody to do at least a week to see where you are and then implement the strategies. But I tell people to draw the line. I don't want you to be waking more than 6 a.m. You know, I want that line to be straight, you know, on your data when you do that. So implement whatever the strategies we talk to. And then, you know, after a week, see where you are. So, and if you start to sleep better at 11:30, then you can go to 11:15 and 11 p.m. and then 10:45, move it, you know, forward. So that's what I tell people. And of course, I have the Sleep Now course also on my website. And I have many podcasts. I have a sleep quiz. So all that information is there.
Yeah, no, I can't stress the importance of this stuff to people. I would definitely tell people to check out the sleepfixacademy.com website and pick up the book, Nobody's Sleeping, to get the 7 proven sleep strategies. Sleep Now, as you said, patented system. And check out all these resources. I mean, whatever I know from fixing my sleep, that whatever assistance people can get from it is it's worth whatever investment in the book or the time or whatever, you know, money, time, energy, effort. It's all worth it. So, Dr. John, thank you so much for sharing your book with me. Thank you so much for sharing all this information about sleep. Anything else we can tell people before they go? Anything you want to point toward anybody else towards besides the website? What else? You know, tell me.
Yeah, it's hard work.
This is plug.
It's hard work, like anything else. It's discipline, you know, but it will come to you. I always tell people it's like a golf swing. It has to be smooth. You can't like whack it. You know what I'm saying? It has to be smooth. It has to have a cadence. It has to have a rhythm, and you can data mine into it. So just follow it. You know, it's natural. It's free. It's within you. All the chemicals are within you, but you just have to implement it. And once you find the superpower and the joy, you will want more of it, you know, and also make sure you rule out, you know, if you have snoring, make sure you rule out sleep apnea. And that's just enjoy the gift that is free for all of us. This is within us. There's no need. This problem, sleep problems are from within. You have to fix it from within outside. You can't fix it by fancy stuff from outside in. Always remember, sleep problems are your mind, your back of your throat, which causes obstruction. So you have to fix it from inside out. So that's it. Visit SleepFixAcademy and .com and buy my book. I got all that information in there. I'm sharing my life's passion. I've been doing this for 25 years. I've seen people in and out. I've fixed a lot of people over the years, and I want to share it. And I have found the joy in my life. I've struggled, so I'm sharing it the world. And let's create a sleep revolution. So sleep well and be well, everyone.
Dr. Bijoyjan, thank you so much.
Thank you, Dave. Appreciate it.
Tell me, did you find my conversation with Dr. Bijoyjan on sleeping to be helpful, useful, or entertaining? Send me a note. It's dave@davewakeman.com. Remember to check out my website. It's davewakeman.com. There will be a pop-up box that will where you can sign up for all the newsletters, talking tickets, the business of fun. You'll get them. And I'll let you know about new podcasts, new events, everything. You get it. Just put that little, your email in the email address box there, and I will hook you up. I will be in London from the 28th of June until the 7th of July, both personal and professional trip. So there'll be some more details as I knock things down and as I figure out what in the hell I'm going to do anyway. But I would love to see you in person, which I always make time to see you in person. There's many, many pub crawls in my London days. As I mentioned at the start, I want to include your voice much more prominently in the podcast this year. I think you heard hints of it in the Dr. John episode, where I called out people who had asked me questions in the Talking Ticket Slack group or over the social media. But let me know what you're thinking about strategy, what challenges you're facing, what questions you have. And I'm looking especially about if your business feels like it's stagnant or it's declining, or you're trying to enter a new market. If things are going along, I'm not necessarily like trim your sails and let's get you to the next level kind of thing. I'm more like when things are going to shit and hell in a handbasket, call me. Or if you're looking to enter a new market. Because I find them both to be really, really related to processes and putting the right processes in place. Companies that are doing really super well, I don't always do a lot of that. So that's not necessarily something that we're interested in all the